One for Mum, one for Dad, and one for the country.
And there has never been a more exciting time to be an Australian.
Budgets are about choices, Fran, and you show what you value through the choices you make.
Dead, buried, cremated.
This is coal. Don't be afraid. Don't be scared.
The treasurer.
Australia's basically done for. We'll just end up being a third-rate economy. You know, a banana republic.
How good is Australia?
Just follow the money.
G'day, and welcome to Follow the Money, the Australia Institute's podcast demystifying the big economic issues in Australia and putting them in plain English. I'm Ebony Bennett, Deputy Director at the Institute, and we're recording this on Tuesday, the 14th of July, 2020. And while we've all been understandably preoccupied with the global health crisis unfolding, the urgency of tackling climate change has not diminished. Australia still has extremely high per capita emissions. We're still the third biggest exporter of fossil fuels behind Russia and Saudi Arabia. And it's safe to say we're lagging behind the rest of the world. And one of the key tasks for Australia is to switch to a 100% renewable electricity market as soon as possible. The National Electricity Market, or the NEM, as we'll probably end up calling it in this conversation, is still heavily dependent on coal and gas, and it has market rules that were basically designed with big coal and gas generators in mind. And the NEM has been, I think it's fair to say, quite resistant to changes to the rules and in some cases quite hostile to competition from renewable energy and storage until very recently. The Australia Institute's climate and energy team has been working for about 3 years now on reforms to the NEM that will improve reliability and reduce electricity prices as well as emissions. And some of the reforms we've proposed and supported have been fiercely opposed by coal generators and big energy retailers pretty much all the way along. But against all the odds, we've recently had two really big energy reform wins that will help consumers and pave the way for more renewables and storage in the electricity market.
The AEMC is redesigning the electricity market so consumers can better control things like their solar panels, batteries, and electric cars.
A smarter idea might be to reduce demand during these extreme peaks. That's called demand response.
Energy jargon, it's known as demand response, where big commercial and industrial energy users bypass traditional retailers and go straight to the
power companies could soon be paying you to cut your energy use.
Commercial and industrial customers would be paid to reduce their power usage.
Oh, look, it's a game changer. This allows users to say, well, you know, if the price gets too high, I'll reduce my demand.
That we're actually meeting our demand at a lower cost, which should lead to lower prices.
And then there's the pledge to cut power bills.
Now, we have seen, thankfully, and we welcome it, a fall in electricity prices.
It's about technology, not taxes.
Renewable energy is the future for Australia and for the rest of the world.
You can't run an electricity system just on solar panels and wind farms.
The complementary role of gas with solar and wind is extremely important.
Potential ways in which the economy can grow stronger arising out of this crisis, and one is to actually have an energy policy. We don't have one at the moment.
The Australia Institute is one of the three groups that proposed the demand response option to the Commission. Dan Cass is strategist.
And to take us behind the scenes of that fight, today we're talking to Dan Cass, Energy Policy and Regulatory Lead at the Australia Institute's Climate and Energy Program. G'day, Dan.
Good afternoon, Eb.
So firstly, Dan, for those of us who, you know, aren't policy wonks when it comes to energy and electricity policy, what is the national electricity market and why does it need to be reformed?
So the NEM is really two things. There's the physical system that carries the electricity, the wires and the systems that deliver the energy we need to live our life. But then behind that, there's a market, and that's where things get very complicated. It's at this intersection of economics and electronics and policy, and it's one of the reasons I love doing this work. It's fiendishly complicated, but it's very optimistic because it's a market ultimately, and cheaper will displace more expensive. And everyone now knows cheaper energy, renewable energy is getting cheaper than dirty energy. So it's a very powerful, exciting place to be working.
And so the Australian Institute has really been backing two rule changes over the past couple of years, one being wholesale demand response and the other being the 5-minute settlement rule. And we've recently had some good news on those fronts. But before we get to that, Dan, what is wholesale demand response?
So in the electricity market, there's a wholesale market that ticks over every 5 minutes. And so every 5 minutes, the Australian energy market operator chooses which generators get to supply the electricity that keeps the NEM going, keeps the electricity network humming. And the price goes up and down according to the law of supply and demand. Generally speaking, the equation that balances supply and demand is met by increasing generation or decreasing generation so that the generation always matches supply and that keeps the voltage and frequency where they need to be. The interesting insight is that you don't need to balance the equation just by changing the supply side. Like any simple equation, with one side being the goal and the other side being a variable, if you can change the other side of the equation, you get even more control. So what we can do is change the level of demand and balance the supply in the grid. So it's a hard term to get across in a podcast, but we can inject negawatts with an N for negative, negawatts of conserved energy rather than having to generate megawatts with an M of generated electricity, and we get the same balance in that equation.
So rather than having to build new coal-fired power stations as our demand for electricity grows, we can instead get big users like aluminium smelters and other big industrial users to kind of reduce the amount of electricity that they need. And so we don't have to build as much new energy supply in the system. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And so demand response simply means lowering demand rather than increasing supply to keep the grid in balance. So when it's a really hot day in the middle of summer and we need more power in the grid, rather than having to generate more electricity, you can also pay some big users who are quite willing to turn down their consumption just for short periods of time, and that keeps the grid stable.
And so when you say big users, what are you talking about there?
So some of the big users who are very interested in the work we've done and we've worked closely with them include smelters such as aluminium, big cool stores, you know, the very large refrigerated warehouses that we need to keep humming all through heat waves, but even other kinds of factories and commercial enterprises can power down all sorts of things that do heating and cooling and generate and use electricity to generate a chemical process. So all sorts of factories and commercial businesses can participate, even office blocks.
And so the idea is they would get paid for turning off or turning down their electricity for short periods of time to help manage demand.
Exactly. So they conserve a bit of energy rather than the grid having to get the last bit out of a generator, which might want to charge a lot for that power. So it actually lowers the price for everyone.
So even though it's in the wholesale market and consumers can't do this just yet, it actually still puts downward pressure on electricity prices.
It does. So we're all exposed to the wholesale market. And even if we're not aware of it in our bills, which we're generally not, unless you go to some of the new small energy companies that show you what's happening in energy, you absolutely pay. You're paying your retailer to hedge all their risks and you can be sure they're taking a profit at the same time.
And so just before we move on to the 5-minute settlement rule, I guess, simply speaking, what this means is that those big energy users, they're reducing the amount of energy that they need, and that means that potentially we're not having to build expensive new coal-fired power stations or gas peaking plants to meet that extra demand for things like really hot days in the middle of summer.
That's right. So the grid is built for the few hours when the most energy is needed at the highest end of the demand curve. And if you can trim that back, you can save enormously on generation, but also on the grid. And I think everyone is aware that a few years ago, there was a lot of talk of gold plating the electricity networks. I mean, these are huge, huge multi-billion dollar overinvestments, which we won't need to make if we can get demand response in the market.
Then going back into the market side of things, and I know the 5-minute settlement rule is a little bit more technical and we don't necessarily want to, you know, get bogged down in the weeds of details here, but what's the idea behind the 5-minute settlement rule and why has that been an important reform?
So 5-minute settlement is just about making the price signal in the energy market really more efficient and harder for people who have a lot of generation capacity, who own big generators, to use their market power really to set the price. So it's almost a competition reform, but it's in the energy market. And we really spearheaded that as much as we could, bring together a coalition of people across business and community groups. And there was really a lot of support for both these rule changes in the end, really from everyone except the incumbents who've got some money to lose.
Why do they have money to lose here? Is it because, you know, these rules as they currently stand are pretty favourable to everyone who's already in the market?
Yeah, look, that's right. The system was built around the coal-fired generators that we had, and all the rules are really a legacy of that history. And the rules weren't designed to be easily cheatable, but there were some flaws in the way the market was designed that you can correct now. And that's why 5-minute settlement was so important. You know, you had regulators like the Queensland Competition Commission and others stating very plainly that the big generators were gaming the market. They were doing strategic rebidding, so offering more, offering less energy purely to put the price up and gain market share rather than just to represent what they could deliver to the market at the best price possible.
So gaming the system to increase their profits, essentially.
Exactly. So they give the same electrons to the NEM, but the price is much higher.
And ultimately that puts upward prices on electricity prices for everyone?
Well, that's right. There was a study in New South Wales several years ago which found that about 40 hours a year accounted for about 25% of the wholesale price of energy for the whole 12 months.
Wow.
So a tiny sliver of hours can deliver a huge cost reduction if you trim the peaks.
Well, that sounds pretty exciting. And like I kind of said, I guess a lot of these rule changes, you know, the incumbent electricity retailers and particularly the coal companies involved in this probably have a lot to lose. But who stands to gain from this? Who is entering the market and keeping things cheaper?
So the great news in energy is there's an absolutely unstoppable trend now behind clean energy that's just about the price. So coal can't keep up with the cost reductions in solar and wind and also enabling technologies like batteries. So all the time solar and wind are getting cheaper and cheaper, and the technologies we need to help them integrate and plug into the grid and work well, like batteries and demand response, are getting cheaper. So the market rules then become really important, because if there's any rule that you can bend that will stop competition, you can protect your incumbent investment. So you can protect your current coal or peaking gas generator.
But ultimately, more competition in the market is going to put downwards pressure on electricity prices. And that's more or less what those two rule changes were designed to do, to help put more competition into the market.
Well, that's right. And that's been our insight, that as cleaner energy gets cheaper, then more competition that opens up the market to that clean energy will lower prices. And a side effect of this consumer advocacy will be lower emissions. So it's a win-win.
And Dan, it seemed to me that we were pretty close. The Australian Electricity Market Commission, who kind of, they're the umpire for all of these rules and changing the rules, they were examining both of these rule changes. But what happened when the pandemic hit? What did the incumbents try and do?
So in March this year, the Australian Energy Council, which represents the almost all the coal generators in the NEM and the big three vertically integrated generator retailers, the gentailers, the big brands, you know, Origin, Energy Australia and AGL, they wrote to Federal Minister Angus Taylor, and we just got the letter under FOI. And, you know, they were making the case that, of course, we need to keep the lights going and keep the grid stable and so on. And, of course, no one disagrees with that. That's important. But where they went next was interesting, which was to claim that the regulatory process itself, just coming up with decisions, but also then the implementation of these changes, might somehow threaten the security of the grid. And it really was a bit of overreach. It's important during the pandemic, we have to keep people safe at work. I mean, that's absolutely a priority. But I think it was really stretching it a little to say that we can't keep modernising the grid while this pandemic goes on, particularly as we realise it's stretching on and on and on.
That's right. And they were arguing, I think, in some cases for delays of up to 3 years for changing these rules. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. So there was a rule change to the timing of a rule change, and then it all sounds a little bit Machiavellian or something, but it was a simple process where the Energy Market Commission said, look, we're not going to get rid of this reform. So demand response and five-minute settlement were all scheduled in. So five-minute settlement was meant to be coming in June 2021. And the Australian Energy Market Commission then initiated a rule change that AEMO requested them to consider, which was about just delaying the implementation date. And you're right, some of the incumbents put in submissions asking for delays of up to 3 years. And just to be clear, that would have meant it would have taken almost 7 years from when the rule was first considered to when it be implemented. And, you know, if it takes 7 years to make one rule change, it's going to take us 100 years to invent a grid that works with clean energy.
Well, I mean, you can't rush these things, Dan.
Exactly. When you're making a lot of money with a dirty old power plant, the future looks like a very scary place.
And I guess as renewables are getting cheaper and cheaper, as well as storage, probably delay is the best that they can hope for at the moment.
Well, it is. I mean, it's the Fred Astaire Ginger Rogers thing, isn't it? With clean energy and batteries, it turns out they can actually do it all better and in heels and in a fraction of a second. And so you understand why coal and gas need to just cling on as long as possible.
That delay obviously would have really hampered things for clean energy. But can you just give us an idea of the scope of the change that Australia has to go through here? Like, how much are we shifting things? How much of a big market is there for renewables in Australia's future?
Look, it's huge. And originally, the debate in Australia had been, can we reduce emissions a little? And then I think the debate quickly became, well, can we get to 100% renewables? Now you've got government agencies, I mean, ARENA, for example, and others, and state governments seriously looking at 200% renewables now as the plan for Tasmania, 300 or 400 in New South Wales with the big renewable energy zones and green hydrogen, or maybe 700% nationally. So we're literally planning now, or starting to plan, for generating seven times what we need as a nation in 100% clean and green energy. I mean, it's really, really exciting where we are just now.
But currently we don't have the rules in place or the policies in place to really accelerate that change.
Well, right. And that's, I think, where the Australia Institute has really had something unique to offer. So a lot of people have been wondering, how can we stimulate energy, you know, fund energy projects, you know, push in energy into the market as a climate solution. And what we've been pointing to for years is actually there's already a potential win, which is just get rid of the barriers, just open up the NEM to more competition from clean, and clean will get built. Mm. There are investors hungry to build all sorts of huge projects like offshore wind farms, which are multi-billion dollar investments. But if the rules aren't opened up to them, and they can't be sure of getting an income, then it's not a good investment and they just won't build it.
And so, Dan, what happened after those big incumbents wrote to the energy minister? Did the reforms get delayed by 3 years?
Well, they might have asked for a little more than they should have and scared everyone possibly. I mean, we and other groups were involved in consultations with the Energy Security Board and the market agencies and so on. So the market bodies essentially took on the role of working out what they would do to change their processes. So there are three bodies that regulate the energy market, three agencies, and they make the rules and implement the rules, and they took on the job of working out what they would delay and when. And we had a strong position there and proposed, in fact, the opposite, which is we think we should speed up reform now to help the economy recover from the COVID crisis. So the long and the short of it was we were saying speed up. Some incumbents were saying slow down by multiple years. And in the end, the Market Commission decided with five-minute settlement to delay by 3 months, which really is something we're completely happy with. I mean, I think a few months delay here and there to accommodate the health impacts of COVID is a really sensible and, you know, judicious decision. And it's something I think we can absolutely live with.
And certainly quicker than 3 years.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my goodness. They were really over-egging it, I think.
And so what's next for energy market reforms, Dan? Where do we go to from here?
So the next big exciting change is this post-2025 market redesign that the Energy Security Board is running on behalf of COAG. And what that will be is not just a rule change like demand response or five-minute settlement, but a basket of reforms, I like to call it. It'll probably be several changes to different parts of the market that, when all put together, really crank it open and really give us a step change from a grid designed around coal to a grid designed for clean energy and demand response and batteries and so on, all working together. So it's a big package of reforms that will come in from 2025, and that hopefully will set our market up for the challenges of this century to go 100% renewable and beyond.
And is there anything else that you want listeners to know about the reforms to the national electricity market or anything that's happening behind the scenes?
Well, the really interesting thing in the NEM is how state governments now are really taking a strong lead. And I think people are finding this surprising, but when you understand the energy market work that we're doing, it's not that surprising. So Liberal states, Tasmania, South Australia and New South Wales, are really champing at the bit to get the market right in their states. And in the case of New South Wales, they've made big, big announcements in the past fortnight about their renewable energy zones. And I think this is a great example of getting the market right. They're going to build this dedicated area in the central west and in the north of the state where big, big renewable energy developments can be built. And these are vast multi-gigawatt development zones. And I think that's the kind of, signal that really shows how fast this transition will come once you get the market right.
Well, it's not often we get good news nowadays, so I think we might end on that positive note.
Great. Good to talk.
Thanks very much, Dan.
Thank you.
This has been a special episode of Follow the Money, and we're aiming to bring you shorter but more frequent episodes during the pandemic, so please stay tuned. You can check out the Australia Institute's Economics of a Pandemic webinar series at our website, tai.org.au/webinars. And our next event is on Wednesday, the 15th of July at 11 a.m. with Professor Megan Davis, Jamie Lowe and Michael Mansell, who together will be talking about treaty and sovereignty as part of the National Treaties Summit. It's free, but registration is essential, so please go to our website to register. For the latest health information, you can check health.gov.au or listen to the ABC's excellent CoronaCast podcast, which comes out daily. We're on Twitter at the Oz Institute with an AUS. My Twitter handle is Ebony_Bennett with a double N double T, and Dan Cass is at Dan J Cass. This episode was produced by Jennifer Macy. Our theme music is by Jonathan McFeet from Pulse and Thrum. And please stay safe, keep washing those hands, and thanks for listening.